This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. Great to have you with us today. Land preservation runs deep in the psyche of the Badger State, from Aldo Leopold to Gaylord Nelson. Just north of Milwaukee, Ozaukee County is home to nearly 40 preserved parcels. But a group of volunteers fear these treasures remain hidden, even to people who live nearby. So tomorrow's annual celebration, the Treasures of Oz, is designed to entice visitors to eight of the county's more watery gems. WUWM environmental reporter Susan Bentz set out to learn about one of them, the Mequon-Thiensville Dam, where she discovers there's more than just tumbling water going on.
Matt Aho knows every inch of Thiensville's Village Park, at least every bit that has to do with fish. But this story, like so many river-related tales, has to do with a dam.
This is a jointly owned dam by the city of Mequon, which is on the far side of the river to the south, and the village of Thiensville, which is where we're now standing in, to the north here.
I'm about to utter a sweeping generalization, but people often feel strongly about their dams. In this case, a structure with historical significance. John Henry Thien, yes, as in Thiensville, orchestrated its construction on the Milwaukee River in the 1840s to power his grist mill. Fast forward, and people like Matt Aho see this dam as an impediment to fish freely moving up and down the waterway. Aho works with the Milwaukee River Watershed Fish Passage Program. It attempts to balance the recreational and aesthetic appeal of dams to restore a thriving river fishway. He says when it came to the Mequon-Thiensville Dam,
this dam was something that they did not want to remove as fish passage discussions started.
So agencies like AHO's, along with the DNR and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, put their brains together, along with a bundle of grant funds, and created what AHO describes as a natural-like fishway on the Thiensville side of the river. It's been fully functional since September 2010.
So what we're looking at here then is about a 900-foot channel that increases in elevation. The entrance to the fishway is right under the pedestrian bridge. What we know is that fish are attracted to moving water. So fish will swim up to the dam because it's, you know, moving quick water, and then they'll move back and forth until they hopefully can find a way around it. That's why when we build fishways, we always want to have that entrance near the dam. So it winds all the way down, and we can take a walk down the path too. But there's a series of pools and riffles that we built. In a natural situation, a stream never goes in a straight shot at a straight grade. It meanders, it goes back and forth, and then there's pools, which are deeper areas, quieter areas, and then there's riffles, which is what we would think of as like rapids. We incorporated that same concept into here. There's about nine or so of sheet pile weirs, and we can see one, actually we're standing literally over top of. This would represent underneath it one of the riffle areas where it's a steeper gradient. So ultimately here at the exit of the fishway, which is what we just walked over, that's about 7 feet higher in grade. And it was designed to keep northern pike swimming characteristics in mind. Remember, they're not the best swimmers. So if you guys want to follow me, we can take a closer look at the entrance.
You can see the spillway opening there is about 6x6.
This is DNR fisheries biologist Will Warzen. He's been intimately involved in this project. Warzen points to a camera strategically positioned to capture images of every fish that passes in or out of the system.
And the camera's in there and it's gated. They have to swim through a narrower flume that has lights in it, and the camera as well as the pit tag antenna. There's actually two antennas so we can tell if it's moving, coming up or going down or come back and forth. And then we have a thermistor that's recording temperature here so that we'll learn a lot about how they respond to water temperatures in their migration.
Warzen steps into the meandering strip of reinforced turf. He thrusts his hand into the chilly stream to find the monitoring device. He pulls out a sealed black plastic tube, roughly the size of a cigar.
So this is recording within plus or minus 0.2 degrees every hour on the hour. We want to relate that to the amount of traffic we get going through the fishway. By knowing the temperature, fluctuations, whether it's highly variable or steady. And we've seen that just by the changes we had early this spring. We had that early spring, we had a big pulse of everything going through. Things got cold, things slowed down, became much more sporadic.
Warzen will take the super tracker back to his office, hook it up to his laptop.
And you activate the software, it downloads it, and you put it into many number of softwares, Excel, date, time stamp, every hour on the hour with the temperature.
We creatures have attached themselves to the thermistor's outer shell. Worsen says they, too, tell a part of the story of the fishway system's robustness.
These are caddisflies. They have different ways of collecting organic matter that they chew on. This guy uses a silk web, silk net that he creates. We would take these and everything else that we would kick up from the rocks. By knowing the species, some are more tolerant to low oxygen, some are less tolerant, some are tolerant of some toxicants like heavy metals. And so we can estimate the water quality just by knowing the number of species of different types that you have in the system. And here's some different guys here. These are Simulage or black flies larvae. A lot of your suckers and red horse will feed on these macroinvertebrates.
All of the data he can collect is imperative. It helps build the case for opening up more fish habitat along the Milwaukee River and its tributaries.
The more habitat units you can open up, the more sustainable populations you're going to create beyond the barrier that you've got. You've got people fishing for rainbow trout in Grafton now.
It was pretty rewarding to us to see.
Matt Aho with a fish passage program chimes in.
This year, northern pike being able to bypass this dam, you know, proven for the first time in well over 100 years ever since the dam has been placed. For reference, we're about river mile 19, so 19 miles as the fish swims from the confluence with Lake Michigan. So that represents, you know, 11 miles that are newly accessible to the Potamodromus fish moving up.
I catch up with Aho, three-quarters of a mile upstream, in the middle of a pontoon boat mission. He's delivering a progress report on the fish passage.
For the last year, we've documented thousands of fish that have passed, and over about 33 or 4 species now of fish that have passed.
This is new information for many of Aho's audience. They know the river. Many live along its banks and are members of the Mequon-Thiensville River Advisory Committee. Member John Trefford's passion for the river stems from a love for skiing. He started at age 12.
And now I have 7 grandchildren, and I got 6 of them water skiing. I got the 5-year-old to go yet.
As we're sharing the short stretch of skiable river with other vessels, Trefford says,
everybody has to cooperate and go in a counterclockwise direction. If you get a new person out here that's going the wrong ways, you wave them down and say, hey, would you mind going? And if it gets to be more than 4 or 5 boats, then it really gets choppy and it isn't linear. Then we'll just go in a house.
The world of his river advisory group may seem diametrically opposed to that of Matt Aho, who is painstakingly working to remove every obstacle to fish in the river. But Trefford says the two worlds come together around a growing sense of stewardship.
We just eased into it. I think in the late 90s, there was an environmental consciousness coming about, so we said, hey, we need to be part of that. And then there was these invasive plants, European milfoil, and we don't want to be a watchdog that people, oh, there they are again, you know. Instead, it's, hey, let's see if we can work to enjoy this asset. There's a lot of what we call coexisting, because you have to respect each other's right to be out here.
Trefford's group will be volunteering at the Treasures of Oz event. They'll pontoon visitors and introduce them to this stretch of the Milwaukee River. As the boat eases back into the dock, somebody spots a beaver along the shore, tugging at a willow branch. John Trefford says it's just another example of sharing the river. For Lake Effect, I'm Susan Bentz.
Susan Bentz is WUWM's environmental reporter. Tomorrow's Treasures of Oz event marks year 3 of the annual effort to lure people into the special preserved spaces in Ozaukee County. I'm Mitch Teich, and among your list of things to do today was to listen to Lake Effect on WUWM. That's why you should consider not just listening, but supporting the news and the interviews that mean so much to you. Give us a call or make your donation online and add supporting great programming to your to-do list today. It's 414-227-3210 or WUWM.com. And thank you. There's more of Lake Effect to come on Milwaukee Public Radio.